Now live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
All right, welcome in everybody. Happy Thursday to you. Coming up today, we will talk with the enemy, Derek Schultz, who does afternoons on Fox Sports Radio in Indianapolis. We'll get the lowdown on the Colts as far as that goes. We've got Ryan O'Halloran in here. He's no one's enemy, right? You have no enemies.
That's not accurate.
Of the Florida Times Union on Twitter, at Ryan O'Halloran. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Going the opposite of what we did earlier in the week on Tuesday, Ryan, we asked folks which player had most exceeded their expectations through three quarters of the season. We got a wide sampling, a lot of Allen Robinson, but a lot of people said, hey, you know what, I expected him to be pretty good. So some other guys.
Not this good.
Maybe not, but that, you know, that's up to each individual's answer.
So was he the unofficial winner?
Oh, he was definitely the winner. He probably got about half the votes, but there was a good array of other players that people felt had exceeded what they thought they were going to get out of him. Today, we swing it around the other way. Through three quarters of the season, which player has failed to meet your expectations the most so far this season? Failed to live up to them? So you could tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, and at Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter, and also the Jaguars Today Facebook page. You said this is not a, I don't know the exact phrasing you used, not a, a litmus test game, right, for the...
It's not a win or else
game. Win or else game for Gus Bradley. But if you say that you feel like beating Indy will probably cement him staying here in Jacksonville.
That's sort of is.
Okay, then it's close, right? It's in that ballpark. Because I understand what you're saying. If they lose to Indy, but then they win three to finish a season, they're 7-9, so that wouldn't be the straw that breaks the camel's back. You think, though, if they beat Indy, what if they beat Indy and lose their last three? Good enough?
Yes.
Okay.
But I think it would be, I think after Sunday's debacle, I wrote this in the Times Union, so it's not like I'm coming up with this now, but basically what we're coming is, how delicate is the conversation going to be? Let's say they don't win Sunday, but let's say they win one more. Let's say they finish with five.
Okay.
And Gus gets called in and says, okay, you're back, but you have to make wholesale changes on the defensive side of the ball, staff-wise. Will he do it? If he is not willing to do
it. Who would make that call, though?
I think that would be total ownership.
Is Shad Khan the kind of guy who, after hiring his football guy in Dave Caldwell, and says, I'm going to trust his judgment, is he the kind of guy that would come in and make a proclamation that I want sweeping changes on this side of the ball? Would he get that hands-on with the assistant coach level of things?
I think he was hands-on when they did the changes last year. He was involved in the he was in the loop on the firing of Jed Fish and company, and he was definitely involved in the hiring of Greg Olson and company. So with those big decisions, I think ownership should be involved. They should be briefed. They should be
I can understand that, but should it be top down? Like, here is, I'm going to put this on you to make these changes, as opposed to, hey, we're looking at making a change. Let's bring you in, and let's all put our heads together.
Well, I wouldn't do that. Because then that should have happened last year. There should have been a lot more changes last year if they felt on both sides of the ball. That if I'm Shad and they haven't, then they don't come to me and I got to go to them, then my decision's made. Because then obviously they don't think there's a problem. There is a problem. This defense sucks. Stinks.
That's fine. You can say that.
The numbers. We had a great chart in Tuesday's paper saying, you know, the numbers haven't changed over the last 3 years. To which people in this building said to me, "Oh, they're not the same team, the same players." That's the point. You've changed everything, and nothing's changed.
Right. Results are the same.
Yeah. You missed 17 tackles. You have the head coach after the game saying, "We tried everything." On Monday he says, well, maybe we're giving them too much and they're not playing fast enough. This is year three.
Right.
The guys who missed tackles, a lot of the tackles on Sunday, have been here several years. So I think it's broke. They're not going to be able to fix it the rest of the year. They're going to try and outscore people. If they're going to need to score 35 points a game to beat the Colts, Atlanta, et cetera. So, that's what's they're facing.
So you think that changes have to come at least on the defensive side of the football?
Personnel and scheme.
Obviously, they need an influx of personnel, but we're talking about the coaching. When you say scheme,
philosophy.
Gus Bradley's philosophy and scheme, if he's still the head coach, even if they change coordinators, wouldn't his overall desire to play that Seattle scheme remain?
That's when he has to change. To be a head coach in this league and to survive, you have to change. You got to, cut players you love and fire coaches you went to war with, etc. So you have to adjust. That mandate of revolving your defense around a free safety and a pass rushing defensive end, not working here.
Well, yeah, they don't have the pieces in place for that. Maybe it would, maybe it wouldn't, but they don't have the personnel. They don't have that free safety, and they don't have anybody that scares you as a pass rusher on this football team. So
that's why in the first round of this draft, I draft pass rusher again and see if you can team the new guy
with the other new guy
and say, okay, can you at least have a double, two guys who can rush it? Because right now this team has to blitz to get pressure, and that's a recipe for disaster.
All right, hold all your thoughts. We'll pick this up in a moment on the other side. It's Jaguars Today. If you'd like to get in this morning, 641-1010, whatever angle you want to take on the Jaguar conversation, you're welcome to bring it to the table. That's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar. Text line number 641-1010. Share your thoughts on what your expectations are for the final month of the season. What is good enough? I know there is a contingent of folks out there that want change regardless of what happens in the final month of the season. And to them, because of all the games that the Jags have let get away up until this point, nothing is going to be good enough because you can't get those games back. I understand that point of view. I don't necessarily agree with it. If they go 4-0 to finish the season and end up 8-8 this year, I don't think you're going to see wholesale changes on this football team.
See, that's where I'll agree with the first part of your statement. Is like, I was a guy brandishing the torches at 1-3.
Right.
Yeah. But that's what we do. That's fun. If they, let's say they lose Sunday and they win their last three. I mean, how do you judge the season? I would still judge it because of what else happened in this division. Total failure.
And that's certainly a reasonable point of view, but it doesn't mean everyone would agree with that point of view.
Well, that's what ownership in the front office are going to have to say. Okay, did they beat a couple teams down the stretch who had either quit or just were just totally ravaged by injury more so than the Jaguars? Okay, what's the real story? Is the real story that they won a couple games at the end, or is it the fact that they gave a couple games away in the first half?
Well, and my hunch is if they win out, I mean, Atlanta is not giving up at this point. They're struggling, but they're not giving up, right? And I get it. They're struggling. But Houston, and we don't know where they're going to be in Week 17, but right now they're right there in the thick of it. So there are teams that have something to play for. New Orleans is in a different situation than those other two right now.
I mean, Houston will definitely be playing for something in Week 17.
Well, possibly, not if they lose the next three.
Well, even if they lose Sunday night, even if they lose Sunday night, they could be playing for that division title if both them and the Colts.
They could be, but they also could be mathematically out of it. We'll see how that goes, not to get too far afield here. Again, 641-1010, if you'd like to weigh in today. The fan feedback question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships is this: through three quarters of the season, which Jaguar has most failed to live up to your expectations this year? Who did you expect more out of, and you're not seeing it at this point in time? We're talking about players on the field here, but, feel free to answer any way you so desire. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Ron O'Halloran here with you. Derek Schultz from Indy Radio coming up later on this hour. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Well, he had surgery, so he'll come back, and now we're just waiting to see about his availability. We do know that if he played, he played with a cast on.
That's Gus Bradley yesterday talking about middle linebacker Paul Posluszny. As Dr. Stephen Lucy of JOI told us yesterday, Tony, a few broken bones in his hand.
Yeah.
But he did have surgery. Going to cast it up. Ryan, I read your item on this yesterday, how they're not putting him on IR, so they're holding out hope. I don't think anybody expects him to play this week. Is that the gist you get?
Yeah, he's not going to practice today. And a key for the... if they list him as doubtful tomorrow, that means out.
Right.
Because a doubtful listed player hasn't played in a game this year. So, they'll go with Tripp in the middle. They probably get Scooter back if he comes through practice well today at the auto, and then with Telvin at his usual spot. So, I mean, at getting Scooter back helps, but it'd be interesting to see how they communicate and whatnot.
If they, I would imagine, if they play without Pozlesny this week and lose, Pozlesny goes on IR, right? Because then you're eliminated from any mathematical chance to get into the postseason. Or
in theory, but who knows with this group? I mean, they've been, that would make the most sense, yes.
Logically, to me, that would make the most sense. And I would think they're holding him back to see, hey, if we can beat Indy and stay relevant at least for another week.
But this is a staff that keeps on giving jerseys and playing time to 90-91. That defies logic. So logic isn't always in play here.
It's not. But put it this way: what moves would you like to see made right now defensively? Are there moves to be made based on what's on the roster?
We'll start up front. I mean, I would have cut those two guys. Branch and Clemens, I would have cut them at the bye. You probably don't have stars and other guys, but you at least want to see what they can do, which would be Davis and Smith. I'm not making them out to be all pros, but I want to see what they can do if they get 30 snaps a game instead of 9 snaps a game. I would cut Roy Miller's playing time just because I want to see what Michael Bennett can do. I know Roy's going to be here next year. He's going to be a starter. He's had a great season.
Aren't they? I thought Bennett was more of the three technique.
Well, I think 6 and 1 half dozen the other, I think. So I want to see if he has any versatility, too. You know, does Avery Jones, can he handle a bigger role? So you need flexibility at those positions, depending on how you line up. At linebacker, I mean, Pozlesny is out, IR him, so you can take a look at somebody else. If he can't play, he can't play. And then in secondary, free safety is a debacle. He's got to get through the season there. And then they've given up on McCray with 0 snaps. So you can't make a ton of changes with 4 weeks left in the season. To me, and I asked this question to Gus on Sunday and Monday, at this point, do you just try and ride it out?
And what did he say?
He goes, he didn't really answer the question, but he acknowledged that there's not much you can do personnel-wise.
Right. Well, he had the quote earlier this year, and I forget exactly who it was in reference to, that the NFL is often tolerate until you can replace. In other words, it's not ideal to have these guys that are underperforming out there, but if you don't feel like the next guy is a better option, you're cutting off your nose to spite your face until you can replace them with somebody that is a better option. And that's what I keep falling back with, that they have to see something or not see something out of Chris Smith in practice that leads him to believe that he is not worth getting a look right now, because he's mostly a game day inactive.
And my thing last week was he was inactive for the Tennessee game because they said, well, we had to make room for Michael Bennett. Michael Bennett played 12 snaps. I mean, to me, that doesn't fly, because you could have asked Roy Miller to play an extra 6 and Tyson Alualu play an extra 4 and Jared Odrick could move inside for a 2. There's your 12. So, I mean, for the weaknesses of this team right now, maybe those guys could help. I mean, if they play him 40 snaps a game for 3 games, they don't do anything, I'll sit here and say, hey, at least you tried. At least you know what you have now.
All right. Let's go to the phone, 641-1010. Jack and Fernandina going to start things off today with the question of the day, asking you which Jaguar has most failed to live up to your expectations this year. What's up, Jack? How are you?
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Good.
The biggest disappointment Jaguar-wise for me was absolutely Luke Jokel. Number one or number two in the draft 2 or 3 years ago? You have to be absolutely dominant as a left tackle. I know it's a tough position, and we always talk about how athletic Blake Bortles is and how he can escape and extend plays. But, I mean, so can Aaron Rodgers, and he doesn't have to do it all that much because his offensive line. So Luke Jokel has to be the biggest disappointment as of right now.
I disagree.
I do, too.
I try to assign blame for every sack this team gives up. And going into last week's game, he had 2.5 out of like 35
this year.
Yeah,
yeah.
So I think spun around.
I think coming into the season, he was a leading candidate for that. Yeah. But based on what my expectations were going into the season, Ryan, he probably has exceeded them this year. Actually, not the other way. I mean, I understand the point of view that when you took him 3 years ago, he has failed to live up to your expectations from then. But I'm thinking more from August, what you're expecting in 2015, I didn't expect much out of Luke Jokel because he hadn't shown you much in the first couple years of his career. And I think, you know, we haven't had many post-game shows on Sunday afternoons where we're saying, man, once again, Luke Jokel like a revolving door. Certainly he's gotten beaten on some plays. Everybody gets beaten on some plays. I don't think he's been the worst guy on that offensive line, and I don't think he's been a major liability to the football team.
I mean, six penalties in 10 games that he's played, it's not ideal. Four holdings, two false starts, but that's going to happen when they don't give him a lot of help in pass protection, which is obviously a positive. So, I mean, it could probably list about 30, 35 other problems before you got
but, hey, that's Jack's perspective.
But that's his opinion.
Right. So, yeah, I mean, and I get it from where he was drafted 3 years ago.
Sure.
But it's kind of it's like Alawalu, right? Is it disappointing? Because it wasn't Alawalu's fault he got taken with the 10th pick in the draft when he got taken.
No,
right?
He's been a solid player.
Solid player.
And
right?
Here in the last couple of years, I think he's been above that. I think he's been pretty good for this Jaguars team, especially in the role that they've decided to give him on that defensive line.
Right. And for Jokel, I mean, hey, Jokel came in. I didn't make myself the second pick in the draft. I think he is this year starting to look more like a solid option. He's not a great option. He's not going to be a Pro Bowl option.
He's going to be, for that draft and for what they felt they needed. He's a solid player.
Right. There were different ways you could have gone in that draft, but that's a different story.
Well, and I stumped for Ziggy that whole month.
Right. Well, he's paying it off in a big way right now. All right. By the way, we've got four packs of rugby tickets. Now would be a good opportunity to give one away. We have some open phone lines for you. If you want to go see Team USA take on Team Canada this Saturday at Hodges Stadium on the campus of UNF, this is for a berth in the Rugby League World Cup in 2017, primarily in New Zealand and Australia. Is it Papua New Guinea? I think is that Papua New Guinea?
Yeah.
Is that what it is? Big Papua New Guinea?
Yeah.
All right, those three places. we'll take the third caller right now at 641-1010. You get a four-pack of tickets to go out and cheer on Team USA. No Canadians allowed. No, that's not true. But
we'll find out after Saturday.
That's right. We'll find out.
If Canadians are allowed.
That's right. If USA wins or ties, they'll advance to the Rugby League World Cup. If Canada wins, they will knock the U.S. out of consideration. So call right now at 641-1010. Let's get to, while we're doing that, let's jump ahead to Gus Cut number three. It's gone from the point early in the season where we're asking, please blitz, please blitz, please blitz, try something different, to now Gus was asked yesterday, has the team reached a point where they're actually blitzing too much?
I don't know if it's, how much. It's not like it's, if there's 70 plays, 40 of them are pressures. I think there's a time and place. I think blitzes are effective. I think when you look at quarterbacks, some quarterbacks are very good against pressure and some quarterbacks struggle. And I think there's a time and a place. And also, why are you blitzing? Is it to affect the quarterback? Is it to contain the boot? Is it to stop the run? So there's different ways. So as we look at it, I think you learn the effectiveness of the blitz, how the quarterbacks do against certain types of pressures. So I don't know if there's any regrets. Maybe the one, the long run. But, overall, I think that you're going to incorporate pressure. But I think the big thing is that, hey, let's blitz more automatically attributes to success. I don't think you can say that. I think that it can affect the quarterback. Your percentages affecting the quarterback goes up. But the effectiveness and how, when an offense does against us, we've had times in our offense where people have blitzed us and we've had big plays. So, it kind of goes back and forth, and I think you go into a game trying to figure out what is our intent by blitzing and why would we do it.
Season-high blitz rate against Tennessee last week around 42% for the Jags. I don't think they're blitzing too much because they have to do something to at least create.
Otherwise, the guy stands back there, la-di-da.
And whenever you send extra guys, that leaves open parts of the field. I mean, the 87-yard touchdown.
Is that historic on the blitz, or is that on Dwayne Grotz for not tackling him?
Well, I mean, I asked this question yesterday in the locker room. It was, okay, on that play, I mean, it's always a gamble when you send six. Is it a bigger gamble when you're playing man behind it and guys don't know where it's going?
Because they're turning around and running with the receivers.
Somebody said, okay, if they're playing cover two on that play and, across the board zone like a quarters, he probably would have gained like 30 yards. Because of the way that, all the receivers were running verticals. So Grotz missed the tackle at 45. So even if he would have got tackled at midfield, it's still a 38-yard scramble,
right.
33-yard scramble. So, I mean, I don't – this won't have great blitzers. You know, and they're like, you watch other games around the league, and they're doing, you know, overloads, and they're doing
and you're
delays.
Like, and every time you see that, you're thinking, man, this guy's got about a half second to get rid of the football, and he's going to get crushed. And it doesn't seem like that's been the case when the Jags send the house.
It takes a long time for the guys to get there.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back. Derek Schultz going to join us from Fox Sports Radio in Indianapolis. We'll get to the Colts side of things, see how things are looking for that team as they come in here to Jacksonville. And then a little bit later on, we've got this Dayton football, the Honda drive around the NFL, and all those other goodies coming up your way as well. Ryan O'Halloran in from the Florida Times Union, at Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you, along with Tyler Devitt back at 1010XL World Headquarters. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Welcome our next guest to the Metro Diner Chat Counter.
These are delicious!
On 1010XL, Metro Diner, where the locals eat.
48-yarder from just inside the left hash. For the win, Myers hits it. He missed
that one left.
Jason Myers missed from 48 yards to win it for the Jaguars in overtime.
Hey, at least we're not piling on. We only played one of the two. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Tony Smith here with you. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Still the one that stings the most to me, and has really since they lost it to the Indianapolis Colts. Covering the Colts in Indianapolis on Fox Sports 97.5 is Derek Schultz, and he joins us here on 1010XL. Good morning, Derek. How are you?
Hey, guys. I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome, and thanks for coming on. Talk to us about the quarterback situation. We know Andrew Luck not back this week. There was some concern about Hasselbeck. Looks like he's on track to play. How healthy is Hasselbeck, and what do you think the ETA is for Andrew Luck?
Well, first with Hasselbeck, he's saying that he's feeling pretty good. He was the full go at practice yesterday, said that he experienced some pain and some soreness on Monday and Tuesday, but he called it sort of just a fluky hit to the top of his head, which aggravated his neck. And that, of course, led to his exit in the Pittsburgh game, which, honestly, it got so out of hand, guys, at around the midpoint of the third quarter that you probably could have pulled Hasselbeck out of there and it wouldn't have mattered at that point anyway, injured or not. As far as Andrew Luck is concerned, they're still not giving a definitive timetable on when he's going to be back. Originally, it looked like he might be back for the Houston game next week, which is obviously another critical game, much like this Sunday's, but he has been kind of iffy on committing to that. It looks like at Miami would be the drop-dead date for his return, which would be the penultimate game of the regular season. So it's definitely not going to be this week. It will be Matt Hasselbeck again against the Jaguars. At the earliest, it'll be next week against Houston, but it's looking far more likely that it's going to be the Miami game as they kind of ease him along from this lacerated kidney.
Jaguars saw Matt Hasselbeck in week 4 when Luck was out with the rib problem, but new play caller since the teams last met. What things are new from Chudzinski compared to Pep Hamilton that you see?
There haven't been a lot of new things, to be honest. The one thing that seems to have been a little more new is that there's less of the going for the home run, going for the big play. Pep Hamilton seemed to come into this season, and the Colts seemed to come into this season with a philosophy of making this into some kind of a big play passing attack offense, much more like the 2012 Bruce Arians offense than either the 2013 or 2014 Pep Hamilton offense. So that was a big wrinkle this year. And honestly, guys, it really fell on its face in the first couple of weeks because they just weren't prepared to have that kind of big play offense against teams that could get against the quarterback like the Bills and the Jets could do in week 1 and week 2. And you saw what the offense did flailing during that 0-2 start. So Chudzinski hasn't changed a whole heck of a lot. They like to get the ball out quick and quick three-step drop stuff, short passes, let Hasselbeck complete short passes instead of trying to go for the big play. But that is still there, I guess, in this offense if they want to try to do that because they do have some game breakers in Dante Moncrief and T.Y. Hilton that can get open. But there haven't really been a lot of noticeable differences outside of the fact that they've gone way more into the short game. And the running game itself has been, if anything, it seems to be de-emphasized. But that might have to do more with the offensive line injuries that they've had, losing Hugh Thornton, their starting guard, for a couple of games, losing Anthony Costanzo, who's still not going to play on Sunday, at least it doesn't look like he is. He hasn't practiced in a couple of weeks with that MCL sprain.
Wanted to ask you about Costanzo specifically. Obviously, Luck still not available to this team, but their left tackle has been in and out of the lineup this year as well. You say that you don't expect him to play this week. Is the timetable for him maybe against Houston, is that when he expects to be back on the field?
Yeah, he said that's the drop-dead date for him, too. We actually do a weekly show where we have him on as a guest on Tuesday, and he said that absolutely 100% he's going to be back for the Houston game. He said he was going to try it out this week, and he said he was optimistic that he would at least maybe get on the practice field, but he did not practice yesterday. And generally, the rule of thumb here, guys, is that if you don't practice all week, then you don't end up playing on Sunday, outside of, you know, that there have been some cases where, you know, T.Y. Hilton, for instance, a couple of weeks ago, didn't practice all week and played, but that's very rare when that happens. So don't expect to see Anthony Costanzo out there. It should be Joe Wright at the right tackle spot, and then left tackle with Denzel Good, who is their seventh-round pick out of a Division II school in Mars Hill, who's actually, you know, for a seventh-round pick out of a D2 school, has done at least decently holding down that spot.
Derek Schultz here with us, Fox Sports 97.5 in Indianapolis. Derek, you know, I know you said not enough of a commitment to the run game, maybe, or there hasn't been a commitment, whether it's enough or not. But with Frank Gore and Andre Johnson coming in, some people thought they would be the final pieces to the offensive puzzle and help make the push from going to, from the AFC Championship game to maybe being Super Bowl champs. How big of a disappointment has the season of Andre Johnson been, and did they expect to get more out of Frank Gore as well?
Yeah, let me address Gore first, because I think Gore, if you really get past the numbers and you watch him play and you see what he's done this year, I really think that they've gotten what they expected to get out of Frank Gore. Yeah, he's not going to be a 1,000-yard rusher. That streak's probably going to end for him. He hasn't put up big fantasy numbers or anything like that. But considering what the Colts have had at running back, I mean, you guys have seen it. You followed the division. You followed this team the last couple of years. They've been a train wreck at that spot for years. You know, they had Edgerrin James. They had a couple of good seasons from Joseph Addai before he started getting hurt. And then they've had this turnstile of running backs, Trent Richardson and Donald Brown, and, you know, really a bunch of nobodies back there that haven't been able to do anything. At least Gore has been able to grind out some tough yards. But teams have stacked up, especially after the Andrew Luck injury, to take him away. We saw Atlanta do that. Tampa Bay certainly did that as well a couple of weeks ago. So I think when you go past the numbers, Gore's season this year, while you wouldn't say it was a smashing success, has at least been adequate, whereas Andre Johnson's been a complete no-show. I'm floored with how disappointing he's been. He just looks like a different player. The Colts weren't expecting him to come in and be the Andre Johnson of the Texans, a borderline Hall of Famer, a number one receiver, but they were thinking that he would at least be an upgrade over Reggie Wayne, whose body really broke down at the end of last year. And if you look at Wayne's 2014, where he was really disappointing, it's much, much more productive and better than anything Andre Johnson's done this entire year. So he's been hugely disappointing.
Switch over to defense, Derek. 19 sacks for the Colts, bottom five of the league. You know, Werner's obviously a bust. Mathis, older. Cole, older. Did they just bank on some guys that perform that just haven't done it?
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. It just hasn't worked. The pass rush has been non-existent. You know, you mentioned those 19 sacks. Five of those came actually last week or 2 weeks ago against Tampa Bay. So really, if you take that Tampa Bay game out of it, it looks even more anemic than that number might indicate. And that was 30th in the league, I believe, at one point. But you're right about Werner. He's been a healthy scratch the last couple of weeks, and I think they've officially given up on him now, which, you know, in year three, if you're still not showing anything, that makes a lot of sense. Robert Mathis has actually been their best pass rusher, but that's not saying much. He's clearly not the player that he once was, although every once in a while he shows some glimpses of the old Pro Bowl Robert Mathis. Jonathan Newsom, who they really thought was coming around last year, he had a huge game in the divisional round against Denver. He sacked Peyton Manning a couple times, forced a fumble, and people thought that he was really coming into his own. He's had a really disappointing sophomore season. In fact, he was a healthy scratch at one point this year. And then the Trent Colt signing, like many of their offseason signings, just hasn't really worked. They've thrown some money and tried to invest in somebody who was a veteran. They thought they knew what they were getting, and it turns out that the returns have been disappointing. So the pass rush is the big bugaboo for this defense, even though overall I think they've played a little bit better than where they've been statistically, notably giving up 51 points and a bazillion yards to Pittsburgh.
Follow up on that, Derek. We've mentioned a lot of guys that you said didn't work out, healthy scratch, moved on from, given up on, too old. What happens with this front office and coaching staff at the end of the year? When the Jags were in Indianapolis earlier this year, things were pretty hot. did things calm down, or do you still expect some changes regardless of this team, if this team wins the division?
Yeah, there's still a lot of criticism for the front office. If you guys follow baseball, you remember Adam Dunn? He's the big guy, hit a lot of home runs. Ryan Grigson is kind of Adam Dunn, where if he doesn't hit a home run with a move, it's a strikeout. And I think that's been his problem. It's not that he's made all bad moves. He traded for Vontae Davis, which was a great trade. He drafted Dante Moncrief and T.Y. Hilton and some of these gems in the later rounds outside of the first round. He found Jarrell Freeman from the CFL. He's done a couple of good things. Certainly the Colts have been winning a lot of games since Ryan Grigson has taken over the helm. But the misses have just been so gigantic. Trent Richardson, Bjorn Werner, this free agent class. The free agent class from a couple of years ago with Laron Landry and Doster Chehrilis and Ricky Jean-Francois and all these guys that aren't even part of the team anymore. That's what people want to focus on. I don't know if the Colts ultimately are going to make a change in the front office. I think it's far more likely that they make a change at head coach, because it just doesn't appear that they have any interest in bringing back Chuck Pagano, barring something crazy like going to the Super Bowl and winning it, which I think pretty much is off the table for how injured they've been right now. But the criticism and the heat on the front office has been there from the fans really since the 0-2 start, and it's remained pretty consistent.
The Jags are going to see Matt Hasselbeck, obviously, a quarterback this weekend. Maybe you can explain something that from Jacksonville I simply can't explain, and that is the Colts have won 6 games, and 4 of them have been won by Matt Hasselbeck as opposed to Andrew Luck. Andrew Luck has started 7 games this year. Matt Hasselbeck has started 5, and he's gone 4-1 in those games. What is Hasselbeck doing for this offense this year that Andrew Luck wasn't doing?
Well, I think it's also important to remember the teams that those two guys have played. Luck in his start played Buffalo, who looks like a playoff team, the Jets, who look like a playoff team, New England, who obviously is a playoff team, at Carolina, who is the best team record-wise in the league right now, Denver, and teams like that, whereas Hasselbeck has played Tampa Bay, Atlanta, who's in a complete free fall, Jacksonville early in the season, in a game that, let's face it, guys, they should have lost that game. They really had no business beating the Jaguars on that day. And then Houston back in week 4 before they really started to turn it on. So I think some of that record, if you really look deeply into it, is a little bit flawed because of the teams that both of them have played. But clearly Luck with the turnovers was bad. And whether that's due to injuries, whether that's due to the shoulder separation, the cracked rib, the lacerated kidney, the torn abdominal, he's had all kinds of injury problems this year. So I don't really know how much to read into his struggles. Hasselbeck has just done a really nice job of being steady Eddie. He's never been great this year, but he's rarely been bad. The Pittsburgh game, he really struggled, but really outside of that and the other 4 starts and all of those wins, he didn't put them in a position to lose. And I think that that's all you can really ask from your backup quarterback. Just don't go out there and screw up. And he didn't screw up. He was turnover free in that home game against Jacksonville. He played really well against Houston. Against Atlanta in the second half comeback, he was terrific. Against Tampa Bay, second half again, they really turned it on. So I think that's what he's brought, and it's a steadying presence to the locker room. He's a very well-respected veteran. He's the guy who started the Super Bowl. He's beloved by his teammates. I think all of those things kind of factor in as well. This isn't just the guy that they brought in off the street. He's been with them for the last couple of years, so the guys are used to him and used to his leadership.
Hey, Derek, you making the trip down on Sunday?
No, I'm not going to be there on Sunday. I usually don't go to the away games.
High of 81 in sunny Florida on Sunday.
You know, this is crazy, guys. It's supposed to hit 65 on Saturday here. There's supposed to be a record high.
That's a balmy December in Indianapolis
yeah.
Right there.
Oh, yeah. Usually it's 35 down here at this time. So,
we'll
guys
enjoy
in Florida
it.
Have kind of a work sense. But, yeah, I got the slip and slide out and everything.
All right, Derek Schultz, Fox Sports 97.5 in Indianapolis, our man when it comes to talking Colts. Derek, always appreciate the time, man. Happy holidays to you and yours.
Same to you guys. Thanks.
All right, take care. Derek Schultz with Fox Sports Radio up in Indianapolis. Got a break. We'll come back, and we will check in on this date in football history and take a look at the Honda drive around the NFL. We got more rugby tickets to give away. We've got some great 1010XL stocking stuffer holiday gifts to give away as well from the Holiday Helper at 1010XL.com. So stick around. Mike Dempsey, Tony Smith, Ryan O'Halloran here with the Jaguars today live at EverBank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL. 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. We've got a trivia question coming up. I'm giving you fair warning on this. You can only enter on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, texting us at 641-1010. And you're going to have to be able to pick the prize up at 1010XL World Headquarters. So if you're one of our listeners from outside the 904 area code, don't try to win unless you plan on being in Jacksonville over the next couple of days to pick up your prize. So with that, let's get along to this date in football history. Going back December 10th, 1922, good old Pete Henry. We know him well. He made the longest known NFL drop kick field goal. How long do you think it was? Tony, Ryan, what do you think? Longest drop kick, successful drop kick field goal.
44.
38.
45 yards. Ryan O'Hauer in his closest without going over.
I want the Peter Brook card.
Moving on, 1961. Houston Oiler Billy Cannon gained a record at the time, 373 total yards, and he did that against the New York Titans, formerly the New York Titans, now the New York Jets. Who's the only player to top him? Do you remember this? It happened fairly recently, and it was due to a lot of return yardage in the game. You remember who it was?
Who was this that did what?
That topped the all-time single game total yardage mark. Billy Cannon set the mark on this date back in 1961.
Antonio Brown.
Antonio Brown's a good guess. It's a good guess because he's got the receiving and the returning. Not it. This guy had 404 total yards in a game for the Denver Broncos in 1995. It was Glenn Milburn. Remember Glenn Milburn? Didn't he go to Stanford? Glenn Milburn, right? He had tons of return yardage in that game primarily. That's what put him on the map. 1989, Seattle wide receiver Steve Largent made his NFL record at the time, 100 touchdown catch in the Seahawks' 24-17 win at Cincinnati. It was the final touchdown reception of Largent's career. Birthdays on this date, 30 years ago. Uh-oh, he's a running back. Forget it. He's going to be a free agent this offseason. Matt Forte, not going to get the payday you're looking for, buddy. He's 30 years old, two-time Pro Bowler, and has never been a first-team All-Pro. This date in football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done or you're just in the market for a family dentist, call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
The Oakland Raiders and wide receiver Michael Crabtree have agreed to a four-year contract extension worth $32 million, with $18 million of that guaranteed. Crabtree is on pace to have the best season of his NFL career after being signed to a one-year deal with Oakland well into free agency last offseason. The Raiders are also reportedly looking to sign left tackle Donald Penn to a contract extension before he hits free agency this upcoming offseason. The Raiders, like the Jags, have plenty of cap space to play with right now. The New Orleans Saints have placed running back Mark Ingram on season-ending injured reserve. Ingram is expected to have surgery to repair his torn rotator cuff today. And Pittsburgh Steelers wide receiver Antonio Brown has been fined for his touchdown celebration, where he jumped onto the goalpost against Indianapolis on Sunday Night Football. The fine is reportedly $11,576 for Brown.
Yeah. It's important that you don't round up. It's got to
right.
be some odd number out there. All right, time to give away some goodies. O'Halloran wants the Peterbrook card. That's up to you whether or not you choose to give it to him. If you had your choice between, like, a nice steak dinner or a gift certificate or a Peterbrook gift certificate, which way would Ryan O'Halloran go?
Peterbrook.
Not a question
not
for
a
you.
Question.
All right. 25.
Chocolate covered double stuff Oreos.
Is that right? you got a little preview of what you can get. $25 Peterbrook gift card for Peterbrook Chocolatier. Plus, we'll give you a $50 gift card on top of that to Anthony's et al. That is to get yourself, put that towards a massage or whatever. Couples massage. I don't know what all they do.
Put it in a stocking.
Yeah. Oh, it's perfect.
Yeah.
Right. This takes care of your Christmas shopping. You're getting O'Halloran now. And then, you can give somebody else a massage card. Here's the question for you. The Jaguars play the Colts. You can only answer this on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, 904-641-1010. First one in with the correct answer. And you must include your first name, because what's going to happen is whatever number you text from, I'm going to have Tyler call you at that number, and if you don't answer and that's not your name, then we're going to go on to the next person. Okay?
And by the way, the phone lines are lighting up right now. Listening is a skill.
Listening is a skill that not every listener has. So maybe they're just calling to talk Jaguar football with you, Tyler, but you can only text your answer on this one. Here is the question with the Jags playing the Colts. Which guy who is in the top 15, this is an easy question, I think, but then again, we're in the building all the time. Which guy who's in the top 15 all-time among receivers for the Indianapolis Colts in terms of number of receptions, the top 15 in number of receptions for the Colts, is currently a member of the Jaguars staff? That's it. That's the question.
Easy
it's
enough.
It's an easy one in this room, and it may be an easy one for you out there. We'll see how quickly you get to the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line and fire that up. In the meantime, guys, let's kill a moment here. As I mentioned, Steve Largent on this date had his 100th touchdown reception of his career. He ended his career with exactly 100. Eight other players have 100 or more. This should be piece of cake for two football geniuses like yourselves.
What was the quote? 100 more?
100 or more touchdown receptions in the NFL. Steve Largent had exactly 100. There are eight others.
Jerry Rice.
Jerry Rice, very good. All right, Tony?
Terrell Owens.
Terrell Owens, he's third with 153.
Michael Irvin.
Michael Irvin is strike one for you right there.
Randy Moss. Irvin had surprisingly few touchdown receptions in his career. I remember looking at the numbers a couple of years ago and being like, really?
Where is Michael Irvin on this list? Man, he is Irving Fryer comes in before Michael Irvin. Let's see.
Imprisoned Irving Fryer.
65 touchdowns for Michael Irvin. So, all right. One strike. Tony got Randy Moss. He's second. Who else he got? Got five more.
Chris Carter.
All he does is catch touchdowns, and he caught 130 of them. That is fourth on the list. Tony.
Marvin Harrison.
Marvin Harrison is fifth on the list with 128. You got three other guys in there.
Tim Brown.
Tim Brown, exactly 100. He is tied with Largent for eighth all-time on the list, and there are two remaining with one strike against you, two to go. Fat Tony.
I know, I'm thinking.
Steps up to the plate. I'm just building the drama here.
I'm thinking. Isaac Bruce?
Isaac Bruce is incorrect, sir. Isaac Bruce had 91, by the way.
Calvin Johnson.
Calvin Johnson is incorrect as well. Calvin has 81 and counting right now. That would be three strikes, wouldn't it?
It would.
Two tight ends.
Oh, Tony Gonzalez
Gonzo,
and Antonio Gates.
There you go.
Two Gates tight is ends. At, what, like 103 now?
103, yep, and Gonzalez had 111 in his career. All right, let me check
if
you
play the Jaguars every week.
The Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Tons of people getting the correct answer here. Let me scroll down and see who the first name who sent it in. I've got to go way.
It looks like our friend Joey from the 813.
Is that what it is? Well, the 813 better be able to come by the Hogan Road and pick up. Where's the 813? Is that close by?
Oh, no, 904 area code, 813 after. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Hold on. Is that who you got?
That's what my screen says. Yeah, we're actually on the phone with Joey right now getting his information.
Oh, you are. So you got it. All right. As long as you got it all covered there. All right. The answer was Marcus Pollard, obviously. Tight end. But in terms of number of receptions, he was... I think 13th maybe on the Colts all-time list. I just had the numbers up in front of me. Here it is. He had 263 catches as a member of the Colts, settling in right behind T.Y. Hilton right now. By the way, Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, Raymond Berry, the Hall of Famer, the top three. Who's the fourth leading receiver on the Colts all-time? Fourth most catches on the Colts all-time.
Dallas Clark.
There you go. Dallas Clark. And Bill Brooks.
Tight end heavy here in the last couple of minutes.
It was, right? Oh, go crazy with the tight ends. Lenny Moore's in the Hall of Fame, right? He was sixth for them. John Mackey, certainly the Mackey Award. He was the guy that the tight end award in college is named for. But Marcus Pollard is the director of player development, I believe is his title, with the Jacksonville Jaguars. Yes, director of player development and youth football. So there you have it. All right. Let's take a timeout. We'll come back. Let's hear a little bit more from Gus Bradley, a little bit from Blake Bortles. If you'd like to weigh in on the question of the day, you can tweet us, you can text us, you can email us, you can do whatever you like. You can walk outside and scream it as loud as you like and hope that we hear it, that you can do that as well. And the question brought to you by the Tom Bush Family Dealerships is this: through three quarters of the season, which individual Jaguar has been the most disappointing for you in 2015. Share your thoughts with us on that as we talked about the guys exceeding expectations earlier in the week. With Ryan O'Halloran and Tony Smith, I'm Mike Dempsey. Jaguars Today rolls on 1010XL 92.5 FM. It's always interesting to see what, what Justin Timberlake song will pop up with Ryan O'Halloran, because it always comes out, and he always is enthusiastic. Actually, that wasn't what I was going to say. It's always interesting just to see who some of the guesses are when you throw a trivia question out there. You know, and it gets tougher now, because now, like, we used to be able to ask anything we thought was obscure unless you knew it. There's no way to find it, right? You couldn't. What are you going to do? Go to the baseball encyclopedia, right? Now you got the internet, O'Halloran. You just Google everything. It's right there for you. It's Google Colts all-time leading receivers. But by the time you did that, you probably had 15 people have the right answer coming in on that one. By the way, so it was Joey who won $25 gift card to Peterbrook Chocolatier plus a $50 gift card to Anthony's et al. And congrats to Joey, and he won part of the 1010XL Holiday Helper Plan. For more details on these and other great gift ideas, we encourage you to go to 1010XL.com and check out the Holiday Helper. Now you know what you can get Ryan O'Halloran. All right, let's get back to Gus Bradley. And by the way, the Gus Bradley Show is coming up tonight with Jeff Lagerman right here at 6 o'clock on our airwaves. We've got XL Primetime next, and then we've got the Fantasy Forecast coming up from 2 to 3. It's fantasy playoff time, so it's crunch time as far as that's concerned.
Dirt. Florida blowing out, and then the Jag loose.
You're so disappointed that Hacker did not host the pre-pregame show with David Land this week, because I know you're a big fan of the pre-pregame show.
Specifically the eloquent opening.
The intro.
Yes.
The intro. It's maybe your highlight of the week, your broadcast week, listening in as you arrive at Everbank for another grueling 10-hour day of
11 hours.
That's how many hours of Jaguar coverage we have on Sundays, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
and thus it begins.
For a home game, if I leave my house at 10 a.m. and I'm home by 8:30.
Okay, so that's 10 and a half hours.
Ten and a half hours.
That's home to home, though. You leave the house at 10.
Door to door.
That's not bad. Door to door. Take out the commute time. What does it take you to get here? 15 minutes? 30 minutes? I don't know.
20.
20 minutes? So, so basically 10 hours, right, for you?
Yeah.
I'm, let's see, I pull out of the house. I try to pull out of the house at 7:45 on a home game. Either way, 7:45, get here at 8:45, on the air at 10, and then Tony and I roll out of here about 6 p.m. So
yep.
That's about right.
I get to leave about an hour after you as far as when I leave the house, but yeah. Get down here to the stadium usually around 9 o'clock, and we'll leave around 6.
That's fine. You know, hey, it's what we do, right?
Yeah.
It's the job, and we'll be out there. It's going to be gorgeous out this week. I hope the enthusiasm is there. And look, I understand if some people's enthusiasm is dampened. I get it, you know, but this is it right here. This is you're playing to stay alive, to have these next few games have meaning beyond development and ending the season on a high note. So let's get to Gus Bradley, what he had to say yesterday, and talking about this matchup with the Colts. You know, as even Derek Schultz said from Indianapolis Radio a little while ago, that's a game we all know up here that the Jags should have won that game. So we asked Gus yesterday if this Colts game will be different than the first meeting.
The first Tennessee game was more defense oriented, and then the next time it was all offense. So, you know, I think that with, you know, when you play a team the second time, and the more that you play a team, you try to figure things out. They've got a new offensive coordinator, you know, been an offense coordinator the last four games for them. So you see some of the same similarities, and then there's some things that are different. Play calling obviously is going to be different. Maybe same plays, but different situations. So that comes into play. But you know what? I think what we've learned, we talk about it. It's about us, but this week it really is. We've got to get some things corrected, and you know, that's been the emphasis for us. We tackle better, we use our fundamental principles, and cover better. You know, then let's see.
This is a reason, I think, for the people who are not satisfied with the coaching situation, that they can point and say, you know, if you're saying it's about us, then it's really more about execution than anything, right? And I guess some of that blame can certainly be on the players, but isn't it ultimately the job of the coaching staff to put the players in the best position to succeed at doing things that they're capable of doing and knowing their strengths, knowing their weaknesses, and coming up with a game plan? Now, you can say offensively, the game plan was much better, right? It was better than the week before because they executed in the red zone, certainly more productive than the last time they played Tennessee. Defense went the complete opposite way.
Exactly. And, you know, fundamental principles, give me something more than that. I mean,
what is he referring? Is he talking about just simple blocking and tackling, like, or gap integrity, or?
Well, that question specifically was he was talking all about the Jaguar defense, you know, tackling. I think, you know, fundamental principles of getting off a block. You know, my thing is, okay, are guys, if a guy is in the wrong place, is it because he's not listening or he's not being taught? Okay, so there's a disconnect between what's going on during the week and on Sunday, because there's a couple of plays where this, you know, they were supposedly not in the right spot and allowed Delanie Walker to make a catch by just sitting in the zone.
Right.
So, you know, and in the tackling, I think guys just wanted to go for the big shot and it bounced off them. That's going to happen.
I think that was the case with Sergio Brown going in on Dorial Green-Beckham.
And I'm curious to watch. It feels like a trend in December in the National Football League to me, especially with young players. This is the month where tackling dies in the NFL. And it's already an art that's dying in the National Football League. But I think December, when players start really losing their legs and they're all playing with some kind of injuries, nagging problems of some sort.
And let's not kid ourselves, Tony, with some teams that are eliminated, they start to think, hey, I want to go.
Business decisions.
Right? You're making a business decision whether you're coming up to the end of your contract.
Yeah.
You just want to go into the offseason healthy.
Doesn't excuse it.
No, it doesn't.
It's just part of the reality of the National Football League, is of what happens when the calendar turns to December. We'll get back to the Gus Bradley commenting on the practice facility. Let's stick with what's going on the field coming up this weekend, as Gus continuing to talk about the defense, specifically linebacker Telvin Smith and how he has played lately.
I think Telvin's been playing pretty well. I think his consistency has improved. I think we're challenging him to be even more consistent. I think that, you know, for every six or seven plays, there's one that he wished he had back. That number is growing. You know, and that's the improvement that you're seeing in him. I think he's understanding situational football better. Whether he can tackle, you know, cover, those things, he's got the speed, the ability to do it. But I think putting it together with situations is where he's growing.
I drew the ire of some readers back at midseason when we selected disappointing players off his defense, and I was the third to pick on defense in the Times Union, and I picked Telvin Smith for the reason being I had sky-high expectations for him in terms of takeaways. He had one interception in the first half of the season. Maybe the forced fumble against Tennessee where he came as a blitzer, got the sack, maybe that gets him going, because he has a lot of tackles, which is great. But it's I think that he has to take the next step where he makes impact plays.
I agree with you. And from that standpoint, I think that's reasonable to say that he's disappointed, because your expectations were so high. And you hate to – part of – I say you. I hate to criticize him sometimes, because on a defense where very few people stand out – is a guy does stand out because of his effort and his energy and his speed and his production in terms of tackling. We'd all like to see more big plays. He got a couple of sacks, and maybe that's a sign of things to come. But, you know, Augman said the other day, Tony, he didn't, watching the film, didn't think he had a great game.
No.
You know, nobody probably had a great game this past week.
I think, you know, the key for Telvin is, are you trying to run around and make everything? You know, that's one of those core things. If, you know, he stays within himself, he's probably going to run into some more plays instead of trying to use his speed to do everything.
Right, but
it's part of the maturation of a second-year player.
Exactly. And on a struggling defense, you can understand it to some degree, that you're like, man, I feel like I need to do more. By the way, he'll be my guest on the pregame show this Sunday coming up, so listen for that. Where are we at? Let's go to the culture of the team. Gus was asked about this, whether or not they've changed it. Changed it from what?
What's the context of this? Yeah, it needs some context. Greg Olson brought up this word 5 minutes before Gus talked, and I'm trying to remember. It was more in the realm of, okay, on offense, don't do the woe is me, here we go again. Greg Olson was brought in to change the culture of this offense, which means to me it's score more points. So they've obviously done that. Some people may have taken that out of context.
That was
the question.
So is this question a valid question, or was it?
We can skip it.
All right, we can skip it. O'Hara is not a point. Well, I know. I mean, because you see, I was like, that it seemed kind of out of sequence with some of the rest of them. Gus Bradley talking about Matt Hasselbeck and what he's seen from him and what he brings to the table as a 40-year-old quarterback.
It's a different dynamic with him when he's quarterback. He is so savvy and so sharp. It's not just getting the offense in the right checks. It's the use of his eyes, you know, in coverage, the recognition of coverage, know where he needs to go with the ball and attack certain things. So that's the part that I think his intelligence and his veteran play has really shown up on tape. But that's the same guy that I know of him, you know, that he's really sharp that way.
Gus Bradley continuing to talk yesterday. He was still trying to get that win against Indianapolis to get off the schneid against his team.
What are they, 0-6? Is it 6 in a row they've lost?
I think it's 6 in a row, and Gus is 0-5
right.
against this Colts team. So Gus was asked about trying to beat Indianapolis for the first time.
It's a division game, and we've got a great opportunity at home. And, again, it's about not them. You know, we've got a, you know, just like last week, red zone and offensively, all right? Is it corrected, Gus? I can't say that. You know, it doesn't carry over to the next week. Every week you got to go out there and prepare, and I think where you start to see where it's not so much of an issue is if it's consistently done well. And that's what we need to work on. So it comes back to nothing to do with the Colts. It's about us and what we need to do. That part hasn't changed.
Well, see, it is about them. They have the football. For when you're on offense, you can say, hey, if we do what we do well, we're going to score in the red zone, going to protect the passer, and convert on third down, and going to run football. But when you're talking about defense, you have to react to what they're doing. It is about them just as much as about you.
Right. All right, let's get back to the one we skipped earlier, talking about some off-the-field stuff here. Gus talking about the practice facility. Obviously, you know, the amphitheater and the club seating will play into that. But the biggest impact on Gus Bradley and the players will be on the new opportunity to practice under cover if the, you know, necessity calls for it. And Gus was asked about his thoughts on that.
When we talked about having, you know, a facility like that, there was times that it came up in OTAs and in training camp, just the ability to get the players out of the heat. So we haven't come up, you know, with a specific schedule or anything, but, you know, we've talked about, hey, this is how we could use it, that we could give the players a day in there. And, you know, the studies have shown that it's been good for players if they have an environment like that to go into. So
it won't be just for the rain.
No, not just the rain. It's also for the heat, I would say.
Yeah, let's look ahead to 2016 where we don't even know who the head coach is going to be.
Thanks. Well, I know, but I mean, I think, look, come on. The thing just got announced this week. I don't think it's inappropriate to ask the coach.
Well, there's a better way to ask it.
And how was it asked that it was?
We can move on.
Well, no, tell us that. You can't bring it up. If you've got a point, make a point.
What's
your point? What are your thoughts about the practice facility?
This is how you ask it for a coach who may not be here next year. How many times have you been able to, if you had a practice this year, how would you have used it?
Why didn't you ask that question?
Because I don't care.
Oh, okay. You don't
care. That wasn't my job.
Maybe, all right, whose job was it? Was that Vito's job?
He asked it.
I know he asked it. Come on, what is the big issue with this question? Let me ask your opinion, whether it's your job or not. What is your thought on the latest development with the city and the Jags splitting the cost of all these new developments?
Well, you knew it was going to get done when Shad sort of said it was ready to be proposed,
right?
Because it's for enough long.
Shad makes things happen.
Once the city got out of the way and just approved the money, it's best for what's going on here.
What's the impact though? Is it a big impact? Because they've had very, with the exception of the high school practice this year. How many practices have they had rained out this year? I mean, I understand if you choose to use it to get out of the heat, but
I think that's what that's what they're gonna sell it as, is during these OTAs and off season stuff in the summer when it's. I mean, where I think it's going to benefit them is they had to definitely cut practices during the spring.
Cut
and summer.
Cut
them short because guys were getting worn out running routes because it was 1,000 degrees out. Well, they'll probably move them inside. On a, you know, every other day thing, so you can get all the reps in. There you go. Then when it rains, I mean, the high school, that practice got rained out, and then they came back up here that night. That got rained out, but it hasn't been as big a problem, as maybe you would think in Florida.
How would you feel? To put you on the spot.
Yeah. I can see that grin on your face.
What? This would be fun for me, and I think a lot of Jaguar fans would be interested in this. How would you like to come up with the O'Halloran rankings for You could do best and worst, or you could just simply do like your top five, taking yourself out of the equation. You don't have to do it today. You could put some thought into it. Your top five press conference questioners from the Jaguar media.
Wow, there's only like five people that ask questions.
All right, well, I'm trying to come up with a way that we can put your snark to use here.
I ask the best questions.
That's why I said take you out of it, because clearly you must ask the best questions. We'll come up with a criteria here, and I'll be looking forward to this in the early new year from Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times-Union. All right, we got to take a break. And we will come back, take a look at the fan feedback. Spotlight is brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking you through three quarters of the season which Jaguar players most failed to live up to your expectations this season. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Tony Smith here with you. It's Jaguars Today, live at EverBank on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, down the stretch we come. How about that top five list that is proposed to you? Nah, never mind. Never mind. Forget it. Maybe we'll get to your press conference rankings a little bit later on. Ryan O'Halloran, how about 10 things? How about this one, Tony? 10 things Ryan O'Halloran likes. Go. Peter Brook chocolate.
I know Timberlake.
Peter Brook chocolate, Justin Timberlake. I like Coldplay. I like their new album.
Broadway shows.
Broadway shows.
Their new album is good.
Candy for breakfast. Seen you eat it.
Candy for breakfast. Starbucks.
Starbucks. Drinking some right now.
I like going to the Flying Iguana on the beach for fish tacos and guacamole.
Well, see, that's something we've learned about you that's like the most inside Ryan O'Halloran thing we've learned about you probably all season long.
I like going to the North Beach Fish Camp right next door to that. Those are my two favorite places for lunch or dinner.
That's eight. That's eight things. Give me two more.
I like going to Barnes & Noble every Tuesday and see what the new books are.
The new books come out on Tuesday at Barnes & Noble. Yeah. All right. That's cool.
And I like doing Jaguars Today.
And we didn't, no mention of anything wrestling related, so there are at least several more on the list that you could easily
I could probably go to 35 pretty easily.
Just with 25 more wrestling.
We know he likes theater.
He mentioned Broadway shows. Broadway shows. We've gotten to know him a little bit. The Flying Iguana is where you're going to find O'Halloran, probably perusing the latest offering from Barnes & Noble.
I'll eat the Flying Iguana this weekend for lunch, I think, Saturday.
See, we should do remotes with the Ryan O'Halloran. It's like, you know, Hacker. Come on out. It's the Hacker happy hour, right?
It's guacamole.
Exactly. He's been working on that. It's getting better. Before we get to the fan feedback spotlight today, I've referenced this cut from Gus Bradley. And this was, what was this, after the Tampa game, right, that he said this. And it was asked about, you know, what do you do when you got guys who aren't getting the job done? Why don't you, you know, try someone else in that spot? And I keep referencing this tolerate until you can replace line that he had. First of all, let's hear what he had to say, and then let's comment on it. Here's Gus from back in October.
You trust people until they prove you unreliable. And if they're unreliable, you've got to make changes. I agree 100%. At some positions, we just got to take a look at and, you know, we got to weigh this out. You know, the NFL is what tolerate till you can replace, you know, and that's for all of us. That's for all of us. And I think that's the environment we know that we're in, and the players know that we're in that environment, and the coaches. So that's just a fact of life. So the players need to sense that. But we need to have replace, you know, someone that we can replace them with.
Now this, people could say, hey, those comments should apply to him as well. And he did mention it should apply to the coaches as well. But I think if you heard him almost chuckle, and he said, you know, some positions you got to take a look at, and he kind of almost laughed. I think what I took away from it was, look, guys, yes, I understand certain guys are not getting the job done. Have you seen what the alternative? We don't have an alternative, or at least in his mind. And you've argued that, hey, you're at the point, and I'm sure plenty of Jaguar fans are, where with certain players, I don't care if the guy, you think he's better. At this point, try the lesser guy, and maybe he'll surprise you, right? But, I mean, that has been the thing, I think, with Gus, why we haven't seen these wholesale personnel changes. We've seen guys, they've switched up guys in the secondary, right? They bench house. You had different guys rise and fall on the depth chart throughout the offseason and into the year.
Yeah, the Devon House thing, that was their big move this year.
Right, which was a bad one, granted, but So they've done it sporadically, but wholesale, particularly in terms of pass rush, we haven't seen it. And again, listening to that, I just feel like Gus feels like, look, we know the personnel. We don't think we've got the answer here to upgrade.
And the fact that that was after week five of the season, when basically said we're gonna, you know, the help's not on the way. But to me, that means they were in trouble. They knew they were in trouble, and it hasn't gotten any better.
Yeah, it may be the case. And now that may have been specifically not talking about pass rush, because that game was more about the lack of run defense. But regardless, I think it applies to anything.
Florida ceiling defense, with a couple of exceptions.
Yeah, and that's fair. But that question may have been asked specifically about the run defense. But regardless, we'll see if that quote comes up again in the early off season or not. Today's fan feedback spotlight, the counterpoint to what we did on Tuesday. On Tuesday, we asked you, who has exceeded your expectations the most? Today we've asked you, who has failed to live up to your expectations the most among the Jaguar players through three quarters of the season, Tony? What kind of feedback did we get?
From Irish Jaguars, Stefan Wisniewski hasn't been as good as advertised, gets beat too often, and a few terrible snaps. From Daniel Cyprian, he's too inconsistent and still makes the same mistakes as 3 years ago. From Duval Doom, it's Myers. I expected missed field goals a few times outside 40 to 45. I did not expect all these missed extra points. From Jarrell, Andre Branch barely over Sip. At least Sip has had good games this year. From Eric Cyprian, I know he's been okay, but I thought he was going to take the next step. Hasn't yet. From Lars Clemens, I mean, is he even on the field? 10 tackles, 2 sacks. Really? From Quentin, Gus Bradley, Clemens, Branch. And from T-Mock, Gus Bradley, not enough wins. Hashtag competing. Hashtag getting better.
Yeah, Jags have, what, 29 sacks right now as a team, right? So call it 30 for easy math's sake. Mm-hmm. They're on pace for about 40 sacks. Really not that far off last year's total, but again, even last year, we talked about, you know, the percentage of pressure that resulted in sacks was very high, and we probably couldn't replicate it. It seemed, you get the sense they're getting more pressure, and that's why their sack numbers are within the range of last year, or are they once again just converting on an unsustainably high percentage of those pressures into sacks?
I would think it's that.
You think it's the second one?
Yeah, that, you know, the rare times they get there, they do get the sack. It just doesn't feel like these kind of number crunchings will be fun to do in the regular season, but, you know, how many times on third and long did they get a hit on the quarterback? You know, right, when they absolutely needed to make the guy throw quick, how often did they do it? Probably not a lot.
Right.
So,
well, moving through some of the Facebook responses here, Joshua said, scrolling through the comments, he was surprised he didn't see Marquise Lee listed. For him, it's Lee's been the letdown. We took him at the top of the second round last year. Injuries have been insurmountable, it seems, with this kid. He is probably the difference maker in some of these losses this year. If he's on the field, he's reminding me now of a fellow USC guy we drafted by the name of RJ Soward. Not off the field wise, but similar build with great speed. Just can't seem to make it on the field. I'm not giving up on Marquise Lee yet. Granted, he has not done it. That doesn't mean I think he can't do it. He's got to prove that he will do it, but I think the potential still resides in Marquise Lee to be an impact player for this football team. I'm not saying they're going to have 3 1,000-yard receivers, you know what I mean? But maybe if Allen Robinson's a clear-cut one and you've got Hearns as kind of an 800, 900-yard guy season in, season out, and Lee is more maybe in that 750 range, but it's filled with big plays, you know, and that's how he tallies his stuff. I think it's still possible for him to take his place in that hierarchy.
Yeah, I just don't know where he fits, because Hearns is a lot better than they anticipated this year.
Sure.
A-Rob's a lot better than they thought he'd be this year. You know, is there, I mean, where can they put him on the field to make him effective? Yeah, so it's, I mean, his touches are dwindling because he was hurt and sort of the train moved on without him.
Understood. Let's get to Derek said Scooter. We're led to believe he was something that he isn't, says Derek. Rob went with, I'd have to put up Clemens, but I don't know how high my expectations were considering last year he did nothing. Maybe just more disappointed with him in his Jaguar career. Seems like he does not give full effort, just knows he's supposed to be blocked and engaged with the dude in front of him. That says Rob. Dustin said, thought the Gus bus would have run its course and Doug Marrone would be the interim head coach by now, but hey, a man can dream, can't he? Larry said, definitely disappointed in Toby Gerhart, our whole defensive line, and obviously Myers. Tony went with, I went into the season without any expectations. They've improved, but not enough to win consistently. On and on it went. We got a lot of the similar mentions there. I've got to believe Toby Gerhart's played his last snap as a Jacksonville Jaguar.
Yeah, I think so. I mean,
for the money, what's the point of bringing it back for that money?
I wouldn't call him a disappointment because I didn't really have any expectations.
I would. I have more. To me, he's a disappointment. I didn't expect him to light the league on fire, but I expect him to be. Well, he's been basically a complete
zero.
Zero, yeah. Non-productive at all, and I didn't expect that when he came in.
Yeah,
so.
I mean, got the bad break. Fletcher Cox,
no question, pedal,
and it set him back. He should have probably sat out a month. Got that right, but once they drafted Yell, then it was over. So, but a lot of those answers are correct. That's sort of the problem.
we'll have time, obviously, in January and beyond to talk more about player acquisition in the offseason.
Let's talk about the draft.
In terms of, we know defense is going to be a heavier priority in the offseason, but offensively, where are the areas you're looking to shore up? Obviously, you know, Wisniewski's on a one-year deal, so you've got to answer the center question.
Mm-hmm.
But beyond that?
On offense, I think center is number one. Number two is figuring out, okay, what are you going to do with Beatles?
But that's not something either feel like maybe you're good with Cann and Linder, or maybe Beatles wins the job at left guard and you've got three good interior guys.
Okay, so in terms of outside the house issues, one would be figuring out, okay, what are you going to do at center? Second is, behind Thomas at tight end, what do you want to do there?
Mm-hmm.
And then third, I think they should consider signing a fullback for some of those short yardage things, because Tyson's sort of a novelty, but if you have room on the roster, that fullback could have easily taken Toby Gerhart's spot this year.
Yeah, if they had chose to go that route.
In the slotting.
Right.
So, but on offense,
they need a backup running back. They need more depth at running back.
Yeah,
they're
going to
have
TJ
and Denard, and beyond that is anybody's guess.
And somebody who can maybe return a kicker.
Well, maybe Corey Grant comes back and takes that role next year.
But, tinkering.
Yeah, but not wholesale changing. You think very likely in your mind that they're going to keep Jokel in place at left tackle, mm-hmm. is that fair to say?
Mm-hmm.
He's your guy. And then, I couldn't imagine they've seen enough to give him a contract extension now. I mean, let it play into the season and see where they stand with that?
Yeah, I think they would. I think that's what they do.
This is year three for him, right?
Yeah.
So they've got the fifth year option if they want to exercise it on him. Otherwise,
I think they see, like, a lot of guys get that picked up before their fourth year.
They do.
I think they do that.
Maybe pick up the fifth-year option and then have them under control for two more years.
Yeah.
Have all these guys rolling up on contracts at the same time.
Because they have the cap space to do that. And they could be $50 to $55 million underneath the cap.
Right. They're going to be at least, it looks like, $45 million.
Yeah.
And much likely more than that when you start talking about some of the veterans who won't be back.
Because you just look at Gerhart and Clemens, that's 6.5 right there. So that puts you at 41, 42.
Right, and if Beatles is not back, that's another good chunk of several million. Now, I'm not saying he will or won't be, but that potentially you're looking at a quick almost $10 million mm-hmm. adding up there on mm-hmm. top of what they already have. Got to find guys to go spend it on, though, right?
And that's the problem.
Right, and because the key guy, right now, you'd love to lock up Allen Robinson long term. You can't. You're not even allowed to, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's got to play a whole nother year before he can even get a contract extension and agree to one, even if he wanted to sign something right now. So, situations like that, you try to balance out. That's part of why they're holding some cap space back is anticipating future contracts.
And then Cyprian's would be eligible, but I'd let him play out his deal.
Yeah.
So, so I think they have some easy decisions in terms of that.
All right. He is Ryan O'Hallen. What do you have coming up between now and Sunday?
We got tomorrow, sticking with the local guy, I talked to a former NFL scout who broke down four games at Derrick Henry.
Okay.
His findings are going to be in a story I write for tomorrow. Sunday, I'm sort of doing more of the, what's the last four games? What do they have to discover? you know, sort of like 5 to 7 things. What should be a to-do list other than besides winning the
right,
games?
Right. You want to win games, so, but what are you looking to find out about your team?
Yeah, or have you found out enough about players A, B, and C that you're ready to move on? So sort of just sort of a where they're at type thing.
All right. He is Ryan O'Halloran. Follow him on Twitter, at his name, at Ryan O'Halloran, and read him in the Florida Times Union's ink-stained pages or on the digital side of things, however you choose to do that. Ryan O'Halloran, who told us at least 10 things and probably more that he likes today, and I have a feeling there are at least as many that he doesn't. But that's kind of life, isn't it? We'll see you Sunday, man. Thanks.
I agree. Thanks.
All right. For Pat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, for Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. Thanks to Derek Schultz from Fox Sports Radio in Indianapolis for joining us today. XL Primetime coming up. And don't forget, we've got the fantasy forecast to follow at 2 to 3 o'clock with the playoff time starting in most fantasy leagues coming up here in week 14. We'll talk to the guys on the other side coming up here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Ric Flair.
Woo! That's great job!